This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
No. Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is this the dagger? The neutral zone.
Oh, home run.
Good. This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
Top of the afternoon to everyone. As you can probably tell, this is not Brock Richardson. I'm filling in for Brock. It's Cam Jenkins, and filling in because he's missing in action. So we don't quite know where he is. He might be in a ditch somewhere. So if you do know where he is, if you could let us know, that'd be fantastic. And my co-host that's going to ride along with me today is Josh Watson. And Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Mr. Jenkins. I believe our friend is en route to his, shall we call it, bachelor party this evening. I've heard a rumor that he's getting married tomorrow, so
he may be
more locatable than we thought. But I am doing well. It is of hectic stuff going on. Just making plans to go to the big party this weekend, and longing to be with some teammates of mine. The Cruisers are in Langley, BC this week, and they are competing at the Bell National Track and Field Championships, an event I would normally go to, but because of said wedding tomorrow, I chose to stay behind. But big congratulations to Tiffany Gaudette on her bronze medal, and to Todd Domingo and Ryan Bennett on their medals as well. We're doing well over there, so I'm very happy for everybody.
Yeah, it's great, and I'm really looking forward to hearing today how they did today, because I think it's their last day of throwing today before they come back to Ontario. So looking forward to some more results getting those today.
Absolutely.
So let's get into this week's headlines.
It was announced recently that Canada would host some FIFA World Cup in 2026 soccer games. Two cities were named, and they were Vancouver and Toronto. I, for one, am excited to see the World Cup come to Canada. I think as a co-host, along with the United States and Mexico, we're going to do a great job, just like we did with the Pan Am Games back in the mid 2010s, and it's going to be really exciting to see the world come to North America.
Oh, it's going to be so great to see soccer, because it's blown up over the years, and we've got a really good contingent here in both Toronto and Vancouver. John Tortorella finds himself back behind an NHL bench, and he becomes the 23rd head coach in Philadelphia Flyers history. You know, with the problems with Tortorella seem to be with the players, they don't like him. And I guess if you're getting the best out of the players, you don't have to be liked as a coach. But he always just has a shelf life of about 2 or 3 years. So we'll see what happens in Philly, because Philly can be a very hard town to coach in.
Yeah, I see another role as a villain for Torts. But hey, he gets results. This week, Hockey Canada was asked to testify before the Federal Committee on Canadian Heritage. They were asked to testify about an incident from 2018 involving a reported sexual assault, which involved players from the 2018 World Junior Hockey Team. Some of the highlights of the testimony included that the accuser did not wish to be identified and did not wish to name her attackers. It was also brought out that members of the team were not compelled by Hockey Canada to participate in an independent investigation that was conducted at Hockey Canada's request by law firm Heinen Hutchison's LLP, and also that two other allegations of assault have been looked into by Hockey Canada, and that there have been 1 to 2 allegations of assault per year over the past 5 to 6 years. All of this is very troubling and has led to the federal government freezing the public money that goes to Hockey Canada, pending their disclosure of recommendations contained in that incomplete report by the law firm, and also pending their signing up for or becoming involved with the new Office of the Integrity Commissioner, a new government agency with the power to independently investigate abuse complaints and levy sanctions. This is a story that's going to keep on going for a while, folks, so stay tuned as we try to stay on top of it for you.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're going to do here at the Neutral Zone, is stay on top of that. Canada concludes the World Para Swimming Championships in Madeira with 18 podium finishes, being 6, 5, and 7, and that's 4 more than at London 2019. It marks the country's best tally at Worlds since a 21 medal haul in 2010 in Eindhoven, Netherlands. And I think we also need to point out with the World Para Swimming Championships that Arielle Rivard, she ended up getting a few more medals and now has 17 medals. And then now she is the most decorated Paralympian of all time. So let's check in on our Twitter poll questions now. And last week's questions was, do you think who will win the Stanley Cup final? And 64% of you said the Colorado Avalanche, which is looking really good right about now. And 36% of you said the Tampa Bay Lightning. And this week's question for the Twitter poll is, do you consider the Golden State Warriors a dynasty? And the answers are simply yes or no. So after the break...
Sorry, Cam. I was just going to say the Stanley Cup question there from last week is quite interesting. Hopefully everybody that voted in favor of Colorado is going to be correct. They've certainly looked pretty dominant recently. Although Tampa is the two-time defending champion, so we'll see how it goes, right?
Yeah, and you absolutely cannot count out the Tampa Bay Lightning because they always come back, and you know the goalie has a phenomenal record after losing a game, always coming back and winning. So yeah, absolutely. So after the break, we're going to be joined by wheelchair racer and Paralympic athlete Austin Schmeek. Stay tuned for that conversation next and more here on the Neutral Zone. Welcome back to the Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your guest host, Cam Jenkins, and I'm alongside Josh Watson. And I believe we're just trying to get a hold of Austin Schmeek, who is a Paralympic wheelchair racer from Mississauga, Ontario. And hopefully he'll be on in a couple of minutes. Josh, do you maybe want to talk about... you know, just from your perspective of a spectator, about the wheelchair, or not the wheelchair racers, but just the Paralympic movement itself in Canada.
Sure. I love sport, as you know. I'm a para-ice hockey player in the winter, and I throw shot put, javelin, and discus in the summertime. And so I have a chance to be around a lot of different track meets, both what we call integrated meets, where para-athletes and non-para-athletes compete in the same meet, and also occasionally a meet that is para-only. And it's a very interesting experience. I think we are lucky enough to have our guest, so I'll let you take it over again, Cam.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are pleased to be joined by Austin Smeek, who, as I mentioned, is a Paralympic wheelchair racer from Mississauga, Ontario, and part of the Cruiser Sports for the Disabled. And he's on with us now. Austin, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Austin, can we start by talking a little bit about how you got involved in wheelchair racing?
For sure. So story goes back to when I was 6 years old, growing up in the greater Toronto area with a physical disability. My parents were very resourceful and looked around and found a club that supported individuals with physical handicaps, and that was the Cruisers, Mississauga Cruisers. And at that point, I started playing sledge hockey. And that was just an absolute ton of fun. So I was just really into sport of any regard, and had a lot of fun playing with peers that were also dealing with physical challenges. But none of us felt disabled when we were playing sport together. It was all just an even playing field, and everybody was just having a great time. Fast forward a couple of years, I was all of a sudden playing sledge hockey on Saturdays, wheelchair track on Sundays. Monday was off. Tuesday was track again. Wednesday was track and hockey. Thursday was hockey or track. And Friday was wheelchair basketball. So I was playing quite a number of sports, and my parents were driving me around quite a bit throughout the GTA. And then I kind of continued along the path of playing playing all three sports, track, hockey, and wheelchair basketball, until around 2012, when I decided that I was better suited for wheelchair racing than any of the other two.
So, Austin, it's my understanding that despite the fact that you made the team, I think it was for the 2012 Paralympic Games, you chose to decline the position. Well, why was it important for you to make that decision?
You know, in retrospect, I'm not sure I would have made the same decision, to be completely honest with myself. You know, but at the time I was 15 years old, so it was my coach's advice that, you know, if I had trained a little bit longer, and prepare a little bit better, that I would be going to the next Paralympics to compete, not to just show up. So I accepted that advice and ultimately allowed him to help make my decision. My coach was Ken Tom at the time. So, you know, as a 15-year-old, you respect your coaches more than anything. Yeah, it was just a respect sort of decision.
Now, you did end up making the team for what ended up being Tokyo 2020. Can you talk to us a little bit about that Paralympic experience?
Yeah. So the Tokyo 2020 Games, that was something special for sure amidst the pandemic. We had been in, through 2019, having a busy season, getting prepared to compete at the highest level. And then obviously the pandemic kicked off. So it was an initial bit of a blow to consider the fact that these games might not even happen. But then again, in a high performance mindset, you just revert to control what you can and don't worry about the rest. So we actually turned the negative into a positive, and my coaching staff and I just kind of looked at it like, all right, well, we have an extra year to prepare. I mean, how much faster do we think we can get in this year? So it was ended up being a benefit, probably in the mental health side of things as well, because like I said before, the 2019 season was quite packed with travel and competition. So getting to really slow down for a little bit and actually reset and refocus on the things that I needed to actually smooth out before going to compete. That was a true benefit in the long run.
We are pleased to be joined by Paralympic wheelchair racer, athlete Austin Schmink. You're listening to The Neutral Zone, and I'm alongside Josh Watson, and I'm your guest host, Cam Jenkins.
With any Paralympic experience, there are things that happen on and off the track. I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about your favorite memory from off the track at Tokyo.
It's got to be probably watching other events take place that were also track events. So when I finished competing, I was allowed to go back to the competition area in the stands at the top of the 100 section or top of the main bowl and watch some of my competitors and teammates, not competitors, some of my teammates compete. So that was definitely a highlight for sure, to get to show some team spirit while there was low numbers of attendance for crowd.
Yeah, and I follow you on Insta, and it's great to see how great you are at cheering on your teammates, and it's quite funny how you do some of the stuff too, so good on you. Let's move to about on the track. What do you kind of remember about being on the track?
Being on the track in the 800 was a lot of fun. I think one of my highlight memories is the youngest and newest competitor on the track was from China. I believe his name was Yang Pang. And he knew everyone right away. So it was really cute and really cool for him to come onto the scene and, be excited to meet everyone. And, he ended up doing very well. He came third overall. So it was a little bit of a blow for the rest of us to be like, who is this kid? Like 15 minutes ago, he was just excited to meet us, and now he's taken some of us off the podium. So, his excitement to be there and to just compete at the highest level was definitely a highlight for me.
Now, you've been spending some time this summer over in Europe, couple of meets in Switzerland and I believe one in Paris. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we've been back on the international track scene now for the last 5.5 weeks. So it's been a really nice season so far that we get to travel and do the thing that we love the most. We started off in the middle of May, taking off to Switzerland, where we competed in the Swiss Grand Prix. That event ended up going quite well. I got a third place finish in my 100 meter against most of my competitors from the Tokyo Paralympics. So that was a great feeling. And then moving forward into the middle distance events, also had a lot of fun racing the 4 and 800 and set some good season best times. So that was a good way to start the trip off. And then we moved from Switzerland over to Barcelona, Spain, where we were investigating new venues to use for a holding camp prior to the 2023 World Championship and also prior to the 2024 Paralympic Games in Paris. So we ended up having a nice experience going through some different venues there, and I'm choosing what was going to be accessible for in terms of the rest of our team. And then after that, we went and tested out our flight route from Barcelona to Paris, where we began competing in the Paris Grand Prix. So that also was a massive attendance. There was 700 plus athletes across the field. And moving towards the competition, they actually had quite a bit of spectators there as well. So it was quite good for the the high performance and race day mentality. And then the competitions went very well. I won my 100 meter first overall, which was fantastic. And then into the 800 meter, given the track was a what we consider a fast track, which means it's hard and allows the wheelchairs to roll easily on it. My Finnish friend and competitor, Henry Manny, and I, we discussed before the race, like, hey, let's work together and just see how fast we can go to set ourselves up on the world ranking list well. And that ended up going to plan. So we're now ranked fairly highly in the world for the season.
So, Austin, do you have any pre-race competition routines or rituals that you might want to share with us?
Yeah, I listen to upbeat country music before almost every race, and no particular artists, but it's got to be upbeat, and that's something that I do before every race, and then obviously warm up as well. But yeah, I think country music is the one that people are usually excited to hear about.
And I know you got a truck too. So do you end up like having a little tailgate or a little barbecue or something in the on the back of the truck?
Yeah, depending on where the track meet is. When we're in Europe, I mean, I can't take my truck to Europe, but when they're domestic competitions and such, we do have a good time bringing coolers and a little barbecue to make food afterwards. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. It's too bad Brock's not here. You two could compare playlists. I know he's a country music fan as well. What do you see yourself doing in the future with the sport of track?
I'm going to see through the next one for sure, Paralympics to Paris. And then I think that seeing on further to the 2028 Games in Los Angeles would be an absolute great time as well. Still, I'm very much in love with the sport and very much in love with the scene and the community that it provides as well. So I see no slowing down in the future and to ramp up, if anything, and take training to new heights and see how high on the podium I can get.
Well, Austin, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview, and it's been greatly appreciated.
No problem. I appreciate you guys having me on. Exposure is always welcomed.
So that was Austin Schmeek, and he's a wheelchair racer with Canadian Paralympics. Coming up next, we're going to switch gears into the mainstream sports, and we're going to begin discussing the 2026 World Cup. And that's the staging for the conversation next on the Neutral Zone.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone AMI broadcast booth. And we are set to get this ball game underway. The first pitch brought to you by Brock Richardson's Twitter account at Neutral Zone BR. First pitch, strike. And hey, gang, why not strike up a Twitter chat with Claire Buchanan from the Neutral Zone? Find her at Neutral Zone CB. And there's a swing and a chopper out to second base right at Claire. She picks up the ball, throws it over to first base for a routine out. And fans, there is nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone. At Neutral Zone, Cam J and at JWatson200. Now that's a winning combination. And this organ interlude is brought to you by AMI Audio on Twitter. Get in touch with the Neutral Zone. Type in at AMI Audio.
Welcome back to the Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. I'm your guest host, Cam Jenkins, and I'm filling in for Brock Richardson because he thought it was okay to take a day off today because he's getting married tomorrow. So he's left Josh and I high and dry, but that's okay. I think we're getting through it pretty good, Josh.
I think so, too.
So it was recently announced that Canada would be hosting some World Cup games in Toronto and Vancouver. Josh, can you give us your thoughts on the World Cup coming to Canada?
I'm excited. I think it's going to be awesome to see World Cup games here in Canada. I think the only disappointing thing for a lot of Canadians, and particularly those in the GTA, is that it looks like, if memory serves me, Italy will not qualify for that World Cup, although I could be wrong.
No, you're right.
But no? Okay, well.
No, you're right. You're right.
Okay, great. I wasn't sure. Thank you for backing me up on that. Yeah, I think that's the only disappointing thing, because we know the fans in Little Italy would have loved to have been able to cheer on their Azzurri. But yeah, I think it's going to be an amazing time. I've had a chance to be down at BMO Field for Argos games, and I think it's a great venue. Obviously, as we're going to get into, they do have some things they have to do to the stadium to host the games, but I think it's going to be an amazing atmosphere based on what I've heard about TFC games. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a great stadium, like you said. And I'm just a little bit concerned that, you know, they're going to have to put some more seats in the stadium. And, you know, after the World Cup is come and gone, you know, it's going to be like the Sky Dome 2.0 as far as with, unless they can get more people in the seats for Argos games, because, you know, it's the Sky Dome was just so cavernous and there weren't a lot of people there. And then this might be the same kind of feel, you know, for the Argos. But, you know, you never know, because looking at the other side of the coin, the TFC, I really think that they could probably get another 10,000 fans there, no problem, and that would be really good for TFC.
Yeah, maybe what you end up seeing is either some temporary stands being put in to accommodate the extra seating, or like you said, maybe it just is something where we put in more stands and we get more TFC fans in there, and we try to grow the Argo game as much as we can, because that's in itself an amazing atmosphere. We have to get more people involved in CFL football. But if worse comes to worse, then maybe you just leave the upper bowl area closed off and you just pack the Argo fans down closer to the field and just do it that way. Who knows? That's the benefit of having the two tenants, I suppose, is that maybe one makes up for the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And then kind of looking at going to the West Coast now in Vancouver, BC Place, they're going to need to add real grass. You know, that's going to be really tough for them to do that as well, because you've got to keep that grass maintained at the end of the day as well. So what are your thoughts on Vancouver and BC Place?
From what I have seen lately, mostly through BC Lions games, to be honest, I think BC Place is going to make for a really nice stadium. It looks like they've done some renovations and maybe even, I think they have some kind of tarp system where the roof is actually open and then they just put a tarp over top of it if they need to, if I remember, in which case I don't think they'll have any problem putting real grass in there. And who knows, you might even see that be a benefit for the football team as well. But I think Vancouver as a venue is going to be a really great, great host city. I think they're going to do a marvelous job.
Now, what would you say is going to be the more, I guess, the more impact as far as for soccer with having all of these renovations done? Do you think that it's going to help out both Vancouver and Toronto, or do you think that maybe it's going to help a little bit more in Vancouver compared to Toronto?
That one is a tough one. And I think what you will see is, even though the sport of soccer is growing in Canada, I think you're going to see it really blossom once the World Cup has been here. Because young kids are going to be able to see some of their football heroes come and play live in front of them instead of just on TV. So, I mean, driving around for track and field, I already see the soccer pitches that are full of kids playing the game. So I don't know how much more it can grow, but I think it is going to.
I think so too, because they have the, you know, Toronto FC and then the Vancouver Whitecaps. And just a few years ago, you didn't have any of those soccer teams. So I think it's really growing here in Canada.
Absolutely. You even have a team like York United that plays out of York University, that they're in the Canadian League and just had a game against Montreal not too long ago. So sport of soccer and or football, however you want to call it, is definitely on the rise here. And you know what? That's a great thing.
Well, it's a fantastic thing. And kind of looking at the teams that did get it, or the cities that did get it, and that's Vancouver and Toronto. But there was also going to be a potential third city, and that city was rumored to be Edmonton, and that they were hopefully going to get some games. However, some sources say the reason they didn't receive any games was because they put pressure on FIFA and demanded, and you don't demand FIFA do anything at all. they have at least five preliminary stage games is what they were asking for, and two knockout games they wanted as well. And the governing body, like I just said, they don't like being told what to do, because FIFA is all worldly and they have all the power. So what do you make of this? Yeah, what do you make of this with Edmonton not getting anything at all?
I think it's just an example of a city that decided not to play by the rules, and it hurt them. I do think it's interesting that once a bid is won, so in this case, Canada, the US, and Mexico jointly bid to host the World Cup, I found it interesting that then cities in each country had to bid in order to host the games that they were allotted. I feel badly for the people of Edmonton, but it's definitely an example of FIFA knows best. And unfortunately, somebody had to win and somebody had to lose. And hopefully we put on a good show in Toronto and Vancouver.
Yeah, and you know what, just really grinds my gears, I guess is the way to say it, that,
sure,
you know, Edmonton, they had, 70,000 stadium that you could fit people into, and mm-hmm. Team Canada Soccer, they've been there a couple of times with games, and it seems to me that it was sold out, and it was a phenomenal atmosphere. It's really unfortunate that both Edmonton and FIFA, couldn't see for the better to be able to have some games there, because I'm sure FIFA would be losing money by not hosting in Edmonton. And yeah, I hardly ever watch soccer, but I watched those games in Edmonton, and it was just so phenomenal to see everybody there, and you could just feel the vibe, and it was such a great vibe.
Absolutely. You also have players on the national team who are from Alberta and specifically the Edmonton area. So I think people would have come out in droves to watch had they been able to. But I do still think we are going to have an amazing turnout in Toronto and in Vancouver. And I think that at the conclusion of the World Cup, you're going to see that our games are hopefully going to be some of the best attended, depending on which clubs we actually see compete up here. So I think it's going to be an amazing experience, and I'm really looking forward to it. I may even try to get some tickets if they aren't sold out 4 years in advance.
And well, with the Italians not in the tournament, maybe there's going to be some tickets freed up. So you never know.
Maybe. I think there's the type of people, though, that they'll swallow that wonderful pride that they have and maybe jump on board with the home team. So we'll see how that goes.
And, In talking about tickets and, you know, the price of them, and if there are going to be any tickets available, what do you think an event like this does, not only for, you know, the province of Ontario or the province of British Columbia, but what does it do for the country of Canada as well?
Oh, it's a huge stage. It's absolutely a chance for Canada to put its best foot forward and show what a wonderful country we have. I think that it can be nothing but good for us to be hosts. And I personally would love to see this joint bid springboard us into hosting a bid on our own one day. I think if you have Toronto, Vancouver, you add Edmonton, and who knows, maybe a Montreal, you could have four centers where soccer could take place in this country. And I think you'd see great numbers, not just in terms of tourist dollars, but in, as we said, fandom increasing and people signing up for soccer in this country just explodes. So I think it can be nothing but a good thing for us. I mean, certainly, I'm sure there's a lot of money that's going to have to be spent on, as we said, upgrades and on security and all those different things that go with hosting a world-class event. But we put on the Pan Am Games and we did just fine. So I don't see any reason why we can't pull this off. So let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah. And that's always an interesting conversation to have, Josh. The fact that you're going to have to do upgrades, and sometimes it's a lot, sometimes not so much, and just the security, and like there's so much money involved in order to put an event like this on. And yes, the economy is going to get a bunch of millions of dollars, whether it's at restaurants or retail and so on and so forth. But it just seems when there's a big event like this that the cities end up going in debt and they never come out with a net game. What do you think about that? Like, what is the outcome when you're going to just put Ontario into more debt, or BC possibly into more debt, especially coming out of COVID? We're already behind the eight ball when we're talking about debt, for whether it's the Canadian country or provinces.
Debt is always a concern, and of course we have to be mindful of it. But I think what you have to do is you have to take a long view. So you have to look at the fact that, yes, we're spending this money now, but if we put on a good show and we show what an amazing country we are, perhaps we bring in some skilled immigration. Perhaps we bring in a whole bunch more tourist dollars, because we know the tourism industry has just been walloped the last 2 years. Maybe we bring in new trade partners, because countries come here for World Cup and they see what an amazing city, province, and country we are, and decide that they want to do business with us. I think there are ways to bring money into the country that offset the costs, to be perfectly honest. But as I said earlier, it's absolutely something that you do have to be mindful of. And I would not want us to be in a position like, for example, Brazil was a number of years ago, where they hosted the World Cup and built all these amazing stadiums. And one of them is actually now being used to store old buses because no one uses it anymore. I don't think Canada will be in that situation. As we've said, the two cities that are going to host have vibrant CFL cultures and soccer cultures as well, with, as you said, the Whitecaps and TFC. So I can't see anything but good coming out of this, but I do recognize that there are those who are going to feel that it's too much money to spend, but sometimes you have to spend money to make money, as they say.
Yeah. And I just hope that, whether it's the Olympics or the Pan Am Games or, for this World Cup, that the provinces don't go into debt by hosting these games. So coming up next year on the Neutral Zone, we're going to continue the mainstream sports talk. So stay with us and we'll be right back.
@NeutralZoneBR. @NeutralZoneCB. @NeutralZoneCamJ. And @JWatson200. Now get out there and tweet one for the Gipper.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone here on AMI Audio. I'm Cam Jenkins, and I'm along with my co-host, Josh Watson. So, Josh, I figured we'd kind of take a look at the NHL awards that happened just this past week and maybe just kind of go over some of the award winners and just get our thoughts on them.
Sure, absolutely.
So, let's start, obviously, I guess, with... Actually, no, we're not going to start there. We're going to start with the Calder Trophy. Let's start with the Rookie of the Year, and that was Moritz Seider, and that's of the Detroit Red Wings. Do you have any thoughts on that player?
Yeah, he's a player for the Detroit Red Wings, and, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about him, but he is a rookie. Looking at his stats here, just quickly... Sorry, my screen is frozen on me. So, I mean, he had 7 goals and 43 assists, 50 points. That's a nice season considering that he's a rookie. And, congratulations to him. He's on an up-and-coming team. It's going to be interesting to see what Detroit does in the future.
Yeah, I think Seider, he's a phenomenal player, and obviously he did really well this year. I do have to talk about that Bunting. He did end up having more points. However, he is much older, so there is that huge conversation about Bunting has played more professional hockey, although not in the NHL or AHL, than Seider did. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know what? Being a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, of course we see Bunting more often than we do some of these others. But it was a definitely challenging Calder class. You also had Trevor Zegras in there, who of course made a lot of headlines this year. So I think Bunting is going to end up probably being one of those guys that may not have the flashiest of careers, but I think at the end of the day, you're going to see him say, "Wow, how has this guy been under the radar?" So it'll be interesting to see the trajectory for sure.
Absolutely. Now let's kind of move on to the Vezina Trophy, and that's where Igor Shesterkin ended up winning that. He had a phenomenal season this year, so I think that it was absolutely no surprise that he ended up winning the Vezina Trophy.
Absolutely. I agree with you. He had a phenomenal season, and just, I watched him in that, which game was it now? I believe it was a game against Pittsburgh where it went to triple overtime. I stayed and I watched that game, and there he was at his end of the ice doing whatever he had to do to keep his team in it. Meanwhile, at the other end of the ice, they already had a backup goalie in place, and then they went to a third string goalie, and you kind of wonder, you know, how long is this going to continue before New York can finally put it away? But Igor kept them right in it. And yeah, just had an amazing, amazing season. He had 53 games with 36 wins and 13 losses, 4 overtimes wins, goals against of 207. Like, just a phenomenal season. And so it's going to be fascinating to see that trajectory as well and see how he continues. He's certainly filling in for Henrik Lundqvist quite well.
Oh, absolutely. And New York's always been able to find goaltenders and be able to groom them too. And Yeah, like I said, he absolutely ran away with it because he ended up having 154 points to Markstrom's 53 in the voting. And Shesterkin, he ended up getting 29 first round votes. So congratulations to Shesterkin. And I think he's got a great career ahead of him.
Absolutely.
How about now? Yeah. How about now we move to the Norris Trophy? And that's where Cale Makar ended up winning. Did you end up finding that? Like, I know he has been phenomenal in the playoffs, but the Norris Trophy is voted on before the playoffs start. Are you a little bit surprised that he ended up winning the Norris Trophy, taking out what he's done in the playoffs?
I think when you look at what he's managed to do in a young career, like he's only played 178 games, it's pretty remarkable to see just how successful he's been, considering that he's a defenseman. I mean, in 2021, 2022, he's had 28 goals, 58 assists, 86 points. Like, you don't normally think of that much offense coming from your defenseman. So I think the guy's electric. I've had a chance to see more of him as the Stanley Cup playoffs have gone on, and my focus has been able to narrow to a couple of teams and not 10 or 20. So I'm really taken by this young fellow and I'm really excited to see what he becomes. Does he become a Paul Coffey or what kind of player is he going to be?
Yeah, and that is going to really be interesting to see his trajectory and what the future holds for him. You know, I was just a bit surprised that he ended up winning because Roman Josi, he had a phenomenal year as well. And when you look at how close the voting was, Cale Makar ended up having 1,631 points and Roman Josi had 1,606 points. So that is like, I don't know if that's been the closest margin ever between first and second as far as for voting goes. But yeah, like if it was me, if I had a vote, I would have picked Roman Josi.
Yeah, and that's really fair. I think it depends on your exposure. I don't know how many people will have seen Roman Josi over the course of the season because he is down in Nashville and he's in that sort of southeastern kind of area. Cale Makar is on a bit wider stage. The Avalanche tend to draw more fans, I think. You also had Victor Hedman was in that race. So, of course, Tampa has a lot of scrutiny because they're on their way to maybe, possibly, if they pull it together, winning three in a row, which hasn't been done since the Islanders of the 80s when you and I were kids. And so it's a tight race. There's a lot of great players in that category. And I just think probably because of exposure, Makar was the winner.
Yeah, and that could be possibly true too. And at the end of the day, it's the writer's choice who they, you know, want to pick, which comes to the Hart Trophy and Ted Lindsay Award. And that went to Austin Matthews. Just a couple
our
of
boy Austin.
Our boy Austin. Yeah, I didn't want to seem like a homer, but yeah, it's my boy Austin. At the end of the day, there that's what it is.
Absolutely.
It was a Pittsburgh writer, and I'm not sure what his name is, but there was a Pittsburgh writer that didn't end up having Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid in their top five picks. And I was just like, I don't understand that. Maybe if you want to pick one over the other, I could maybe understand it. But to have both off, not your top five, that just stunned me. But saying that, Austin Matthews, he had 60 goals, which hasn't been done since 10 or 15 years approximately. And I think he had about 106 points. What can you say about our boy Austin, Josh?
What's left to say? I mean, he's become the leader of that team. He 60 goals. What more can you say than 60 goals? Like, that is so hard to do in today's NHL. And I've questioned his attitude at times. Just, I remember last year's playoffs, some of the in scrums, he would just kind of smirk at the other player roughing him up or whatever. And I kind of wondered, like, how serious are you? But then he came out this year and scored 60 goals, and he got a bit more physical than he has been in the past. And I really see him shaping into more of a leader on this team, along with the other leadership members like
Morgan Riley. And
thank you.
I think you got
Morgan Riley's name escaped me there. And yeah, I think he's a great choice. Connor McDavid obviously is generational player as well, and it's like good for him. I think he deserves it.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think he deserves it as well. And I just think that, you know, it's a tight race between Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, because what do you value more? Connor McDavid certainly had a lot of points. However, Austin Matthews is able to score 60 goals, and I think that's what ended up winning out at the end of the day. So this is the end of our show and for this week. So I would like to thank my co-worker, Josh Watson, technical producer, Matt Agnew, the technical supervisors, Paula Dineen, and the producer of The Neutral Zone is Brock Richardson, and the manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. And join us for our next live broadcast, Friday, July the 8th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we take a week off to celebrate the wonderful country of Canada. Until then, take care, and as always, I'm Cam Jenkins.